mean, they did like a reunion.
Okay, so I'll start off with a few stories that happened to me. So story number one is, besides being a rabbi, and so I also have a food business. I sell, I have a kitchen. We sell Heimische food, challah, kugel, and things like that. So one day, this distributor, supplier pulls up, and he delivers the chicken, you know, very Jewish, right? Payo. So he drops it off, and his driver brought in the wrong invoice. He brought it in, maybe it was for Kosher Kingdom or something. So my wife glances at the invoice. She sees it's not for us, it's for someone else. And she happens to notice that he's charging this other fellow $6.78 a pound of chicken, and we're paying $7.99. So my wife called him right away and said, can you give us the same price? So he said, yeah. But so is this fellow doing anything wrong by charging me this fee? So that's the question number one.
I mean, is he allowed to charge different people?
Not a question of different people, different people. Is there an issue of overcharging? That's really what we're going to talk about. What we're going to talk about today. I had another story where there was a fellow. People used him as an accountant. I decided to use him 1 year because many of my friends were using him, and I didn't think to ask how much he charged because many of my friends were very price conscious. Very responsible, very good, all used him, and I get a bill from him for $650. This is a basic return, plus maybe a K-1. I'd used to be paying $250 to a very good accountant, and I happened to notice that the $650 was like 10% of my tax return, which would have been $6,500 from COVID in 2020, so that he felt he was entitled to this. Okay, so did this fellow do anything wrong here? Well, let's discuss that. So, there's a pasuk in Parshas Bahar. The pasuk says, "Al toinu ish es achiv." A person should not cheat or overcharge his friend. Okay. Now, so the Gemara says, "What does this mean?" The Gemara says that if you charge less than a sixth above the market price, so then that's okay. That's reasonable. If you charge a sixth itself, exactly a sixth. So the Gemara says, Kano Machzer, no, which means that the transaction is valid, but the victim, the buyer, and we'll talk about him as the buyer, can demand back the extra money. So simply that means that if an item costs $600 and you charged him $700, if the market price is $600, you charge him $700, so the sale is valid, but the victim, the buyer in this case, can demand back that $100.
But from what I understand, in according to halacha, there's no such thing as caveat emptor. Am I correct?
What does that mean?
Caveat emptor, buyer beware. Latin for buyer beware.
What does that mean?
You can overcharge some of those zoom.
That is absolutely incorrect. And we're going to be discussing today that if you're not weary of these halachas, these scenarios come up on a daily basis.
Okay.
As we'll see, that this fellow with the chicken was overcharging me. He was violating this halacha, and I can actually take him to court now, and he owes me that money. And this accountant, we'll see, owes me that money back. Has to pay me back, as we'll discuss.
But the concept of caveat emptor, the time you make the deal.
That's not true. It's not accurate.
I'm talking about on the secular.
Oh, secular. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Jewish law.
On the caveat emptor, you would be charged with the responsibility of finding out what the market is and determining whether it was a fair price and negotiating a fair price, because on the concept of buyer beware, that would be your duty. What you're telling me is you're kind of transferring the duty of being fair to the seller as opposed to...
It's both. And actually, the Gemara says that this is the halacha, that the buyer, in this case, or whoever the victim is, has a certain amount of time to go check out and ascertain that his product, what the correct price is. So the words of the Mishnah is Kadesha Yara, he should show it Latagar to another merchant, an expert, or to his relative, right? Everybody has a brother-in-law who knows everything. Right, in Yiddish they call him a schwager, right? Everybody has one of those. And you go find out how much it is.
Yeah, but this causes what Shvilchus is delayed. Because what you're doing is, instead of having a final deal, where you shake hands, you agree on a price, And if you pay too much, tough nookies. If you pay too little, you did well. And the people go about their business. Now, every situation where you do the business, you sell the chicken, and then you can come back and say, hey, you overcharged me. And
right. So Jewish law requires that a seller sell for an appropriate price. And we're going to see it goes the other way also. The buyer has to make sure, if the buyer knows that he's paying too little, he is responsible to notify the seller and not pay too little. I had recently a story where my son was bar mitzvah, and I was a little bit desperate because I had ordered tefillin from someone in Israel, and he never delivered the tefillin, even though he told me a month before that he would have them there on time, but he never delivered the tefillin. So here he had 2 months after the bar mitzvah, no tefillin. My son's wearing tefillin from a gemach, and he needs tefillin. So I approached the sofer. I won't say who it was. I don't think he did anything wrong, but it's not necessary. And I said, what kind of tefillin do you have? And he said, I have the parshias come from there, and the batim come from here, and the ritzuas come from here. You want to research if this is good quality according to Jewish law. So I did some research, and I was told, very good. So I asked the fellow, how much is this going to cost? And he said, it's got to be at least $3,000. Wow. We're not finished yet. You're way behind. You're thinking, you better get started. Inflation. Get going. You're making bar mitzvah soon. You missed the whole point of the story. He comes back to me when the tefillin are done, and he says it'll be $4,300. So I said to him, you told me it's got to be at least three. At least three means 32. 35. I don't think you can push at least three past 35 and whatever. But then I said, what is the market value of this pair of tefillin if it costs him? And this is what today, Stam, Torah tefillin, mezuzahs went up tremendously. That was one area where inflation in America even, Israel, other places went up even more. But in America, went up very much is this area. And so when you talk about a sofer buying those products for, we're talking about the batim, the parshis, the ritzuas for $3,000 and then putting in 5 hours of work. So for him to resell it for less than $4,000 or so is way below market. And the $3,000 that he had quoted, even though yes, technically I could have taken him to task and said, what do you mean? This is the price we made up. But I would have had an issue of, I know, I would have been underpaying him for this and I owe him the money anyhow. Okay, so it's very important whenever you get a good deal to know that whether you're selling at a great deal or you're buying for a very good deal, you should know that you have to do your research. Now,
Josh and I had a partner who unfortunately passed away at a young age. But anyway, he invited me to have dinner with his wife and children on Lincoln Road. And he was a firm guy. So we went to a kosher restaurant, and you know, I picked up the bill. I was very surprised. It seemed like, geez, it was a lot of money. I said to myself, I said, wow, kosher food must be really, really expensive. I didn't say anything to him because I didn't want to make him feel bad. So we left the restaurant, and the owner of the restaurant came running after me. That I paid someone else's bill.
Okay.
So as long as we're talking about personal cases, I don't know if you will answer the kasha, but I'll bring it up and if it's within the scope. So if I have two type of, I sell to wholesale and I sell retail. So I have two types of customers. So I was a wholesale, I sell cheaper, retail I sell for more, and I do not want to compete with my wholesale, so I may even sell for a little bit more the retail that they sell.
Right, 100%. So we need to understand like this. There's something called the market price, right? Determining the exact market price of an item takes work. It's not a simple answer. And there may be people who disagree on what the price of something is. Also, the different services associated with it also play into it. So you have South Florida selling you a bottle, a can of Coke like this, It sells for $1.50. In the airport, this soda costs you $3, right? Because in the airport, they're supplying a certain service. Certain stores, because of the ambience, and on Coney Island Avenue in Flatbush, there's a store called Pomegranate. You walk in there, everybody's upper class. I don't like shopping there because I don't feel I belong here. Everybody's like, and I'm not from there. Around the corner on Avenue M is a place called Mountain Fruit. I walk in, everybody's like me. But Pomegranate charges a premium for the people who want to be part of that society. They want to be there. They want to say, we shop in Pomegranate. And they can do that. And they can do that. And that is the market for that thing. So you have to know exactly what's going on. So for example, we're going to see that even on a service, there's also an issue of, not only on selling a product. So let's say you have a fresh attorney. Straight, he just passed his bar. He opens up his own practice. Well, how much should his going price per hour be, Josh?
As much as the client will pay.
Okay, so
he's good at your.
Okay, so I don't know. I'll throw some numbers out. You'll tell me if I'm off. So let's just say the going rate for a freshie he just came out of school, is $250 an hour. And this guy convinces himself that he's top notch. He has his nose in the air. He's top notch. He's charging $450. So with that big of a disparity, it's very likely that he has a problem here, and he's charging too much, and he's being over on this, and he has to give the money back to the client.
It also depends on how productive he is. Some people charge $250 an hour, but it takes them 20 hours to do something, and someone could charge $450 an hour and do it in 3 hours.
Right. It's all part of the discussion, and you have to know. But you have to know that there's something here that needs to be addressed. When it comes to Einar,
and you might get to this, is there a cutoff? Because like Bob is saying, at some point, every deal I could go 2 years later, say, you overcharged.
Okay, so we're going to get.
Will be flooded with.
Right. So 2 points. So the official policy of the Mishnah is Kadei Sheyera L'Tagar or L'Kroiva, enough time that you had to show the product to an expert, either a real expert or a relative or someone. If it's something that's very rare, or you live in a place where there are no experts on this thing, you bought a very expensive suit, and the only place you'll find someone who can actually assess it is in Italy. Today, with the internet, obviously this doesn't exist. So then until you went to Italy and checked it out, it wouldn't be, but that's a rare case. But under normal circumstances, you have some amount of time to go and check, whatever's reasonable. But that's only, and after that point, the fact that you didn't go and check, the assumption is that you are Michael, that you forgave your right to go back on the sale. But this is only where this person who's the victim of this deal, he has the product in his hand and he can show it to someone. When there's no product to show, like on a service, an attorney, or something similar, or on property we have to discuss as a subject by itself. You can't take your property with you to the assessor. So yes, he can go there, but the discussion of the focus of the of showing it to someone was something that can be moved and shown, so then the halacha wouldn't apply, and the person technically has forever to come back and argue, this fellow who overcharged me, according to halacha, if I can prove that his $650 for my tax return is way out of whack, he has to give me back the difference.
Rabbi, suppose the person you bought the tefillin from was your brother-in-law. And you said to yourself, hey, my brother-in-law would never, never cheat me. So you didn't conduct an investigation. And by the by, you encountered someone who was purchasing tefillin of a like quality, and you happen to learn that he was able to buy it for half of what you paid for it. Is there a doctrine in halacha that because you had special trust and confidence, and we call that a fiduciary type of relationship with the seller, that that the time to investigate is extended?
No, it wouldn't make a difference in there. I mean, if the halacha does discuss if you consulted someone and he made a mistake, So then obviously you have that more time, or if you can prove that he made a mistake, or if let's say a person had what's called Jilgarachan Aynas, something happened, he ended up in the hospital, and then, so we don't assume that the man ended up in the hospital, that as soon as he was discharged, he ran straight from there to the jeweler with his ring to say, was I overcharged? So then that kind of like puts a stay on it, a hold on the timeline, and then we'd have to come up with a reasonable time of what makes sense. We asked Rabbi Greenspan, who leads our group, today, where I'm standing in the store, and I can Google this, you know, does the guy only have 5 minutes? So he held, it was, you definitely always have at least 24 hours to investigate the product, even if all the information is at your fingertips. You would never be limited to less than 24 hours to do this.
Putting aside time, maybe to ask the question a different way, is there any situation where a person does have more responsibility than general, like if they are a fiduciary? I mean, there's a general responsibility not to overcharge, but is there situations where, because of the trust and confidence they've given to you as an attorney, as an accountant, you know, you're the expert, that you have more of an obligation to disclose and to keep their interest at heart?
He's always obligated, irrespective of who he is. It doesn't make a difference
if he's your friend. Doesn't matter what the relationship
is. Right, he's always responsible. It's always that same responsibility. It's across the board. I don't care if he's your brother or your father.
So the relationship between the buyer and the seller doesn't matter.
Every single person is fully responsible.
Right.
Everybody's
exactly.
A fiduciary.
So listen but, to listen to this story. Yeah.
I don't think you mentioned. Did you mention? Maybe that actually. I'm thinking about it.
There's a lot of things that I didn't mention, but let's. I just want to give one story. So I have a 10th grade daughter, and she does babysitting. So she says she one of the neighbors hired her to babysit. So when she's finished, she says, how much do you take? 15, 17? She told me the going rate for girls her age in North Miami Beach is $10 to $12 an hour. Now, one of the teachers one time asked in school, girls, how much do girls get for babysitting? So the girls in North Miami Beach said 10, 12. The girls from Surfside from Boca Raton said 15, 17. Okay, so this happened in North Miami Beach. So this woman said, how much do you take? 15, 17. Not, you know, always knowing the girl and the thing. And I told my daughter, I said, if you would have told her, so my daughter told her I take whatever. If you would have told her you take 17, you would have had to give that extra money back. You're not entitled to do it. That's beyond the going rate. And you have to give that back. And again, because there's no product, so there's no timeline. And you can come back at any time to get that money back.
What if she's like an extra good babysitter? She's
so you're right. If she's an extra good babysitter, then she could charge more.
So
this is a 10th grader.
You have a market value. Yeah.
Yes, you could.
Why?
Because if you can prove, because this is the standard for the regular girl. If you have a post-seminary girl, or let's say it's Hanukkah, and nobody wants to do it, or something like that, so then the price goes up, and $25 an hour could be normal.
But the way it'd be conveyed, would that be according to the age of the person?
It's not really age. It goes by what the norm is.
A girl
who's 19, who obviously is more responsible, who comes with her own car, and she could be a mother herself, and she's babysitting, obviously is gonna, the marker for such a girl to come to your house to babysit is definitely going to be significantly more, and if it makes sense, it's $25 an hour.
There really is no market for things like that. I mean, don't we have to give a certain amount of deference to the mentality of the buyer and the seller to agree on what's a fair price, as opposed to ascribing fairness to some type of hypothetical market where a reasonable
if there is no disagree? Market, if there is no market, like Reb Chaim Kanievsky passed away and they sold his shtender for $200,000, there is no market for that product, so that there's nothing to talk about. Any item that doesn't have a market, fine. But if there's a normal price, it's not like this is the first girl that showed up to babysit. There's a going rate of what the girls this age and this responsibility take to do this service in this neighborhood. So then,
it seems to me kind of silly if you could have a babysitter and she's a year older and it's a Hanukkah and she has a car, or can have a trial and what all that's worth and whether that's fair to charge a premium of 30% as opposed to 10%.
You're right, you would have to.
You have to just leave to the discretion of the people. Otherwise, you're going to have a contentious society. Everyone's going to argue. hey, you know, my neighbor has a babysitter that did it for $15 an hour, you charge me $17 an hour.
These laws apply more like to the cook, okay?
Well, you're saying service also, though.
The service is hard. One second. Now, we have to remember, so let's go one more thing that really needs to be addressed. What makes the market price? So it's actually interesting that this wasn't really discussed in the much earlier Paiskim, in the much earlier Svar, but so some of really today's rabbis are offering ideas. So two basic ideas are positions are held by two rabbis of today. And one position is we take all the prices together and kind of say that's the price. Meaning if people are paying from 10 to 12, right, so then that's the price. And again, you always have within a sixth of that price that you would still be reasonable to, so that we shouldn't have to be fighting. It's normal business practice to not nitpick on every nickel. So within a sixth is always considered normal business practice. The other rabbi wants position is, if this price is sustainable and people will pay it, then that is considered a market price. I remember when I was, this is 20 years ago and things have sure changed. I remember at the time people being very surprised that a store was selling a Yom Tov outfit, a nice outfit for Yom Tov for a five-year-old for $329. And it didn't, like, people bought it. It sold like hotcakes. They were flying off the shelf. So this person proved that this is a sustainable price for this item.
No, everybody has to pay $330.
Not everybody has to pay that. There are cheaper items out there, and that's the market. But the most difficult point in this whole subject is this that you're asking, is to define what exactly is the price and what's justifiable and what's not. It's very difficult to do it. So usually you won't be able to prove it unless it's way out of whack. My tax return, which should have been $250, and this fellow's charging me $650. There's no question he's out of the market. There's nothing to talk about over there.
And under secular law, the market price is defined as what a willing buyer and a willing seller are willing to pay, where there's no compulsion to either buy or sell. That's the market.
So Jewish law adds another factor where if one of the parties wasn't aware that they were being overcharged, there's another factor there. That's really what today's topic is about.
But from a practical perspective, for services, if there's no end point, there's no cutoff point, the business will be clogged with cases. Everybody will, I mean, I know from an attorney, if our clients could come back to us 2 years later, say, oh, that one you paid us was wrong, and bring us to Bezdin, I mean, there's no end to it.
Okay, so just an interesting story. So it's brought in the Pesachei Tshuva that in a certain city where the whole city dealt in diamonds, and it got to the point where they were dealing with this. The buyers were all coming back and saying, you overcharged me, I know. So the sages, the rabbis at the time, didn't know what to do. So after consulting with the great men of the generation, they made a law that there is no Aina, there is no claims of Aina in this city on diamonds. You buy it, you keep it. You cannot come back with a claim of Aina. They needed to do that because there was no one was doing business. You couldn't move. Okay, so there is one Aitza.
How can they do that? A hefker doesn't matter. How can you just override?
So they quote there in the Tshuva, a rush that says, I don't have my glasses here, but that there's a rush that says that the Beis Din has a right to make a takana for the sake of the. It's a rush that says that the Chachamim of the time have the authority to make such institutions under those circumstances, as long as it doesn't override the halacha, which that's what they're coming to discuss in that story there, whatever the story was. But that's the concept.
Suppose someone, a merchant, buys a product, and unfortuitously for the merchant, the price goes all the way up. This becomes a scarcity. And so the merchant, now the market is much higher, and the merchant is able to make a windfall. Is that fair, that the merchant should be able to make a windfall because there's a big disparity between what they paid and what they're selling?
Again, the this increase in price took place after the sale was taken.
No. Before the sale was made, a merchant buys it for $1, and because of some scarcity in the market, it goes to $10. So now the merchant is selling it and making a $9 profit, which was totally due to fortuitous circumstances. Is that fair under halacha, or is
if today's market, according to the scarcity, the availability of the item, so that's what it's going for. If you remember, there was a shortage of toilet paper, right around now, 3 years ago, right? You couldn't and things like
COVID.
That because of COVID, and different times when there was this issue. Actually, most people probably don't even know this, but there's actually a shortage. I don't know if it's going on everywhere, but in North Miami Beach, no one has any egg noodles. Right? I need egg noodles to make lakshin kugel, yashalmi kugel, and no one has in the suppliers. Nobody has. I can't get them anywhere. I'm ordering them on Amazon.
Where is Mrs. Goodman when we need
her? I'm buying Strites, egg noodles. I mean, now I'm Pesach Dick, but I'm buying Strites egg noodles on Amazon. So that creates that the price goes up. No one has them. So if somebody does have them, and he raises the price because of the thing, that's justified. I was in Denver. I was born in Denver. I don't know if you know this.
Really?
Yeah. My father was a rabbi in the yeshiva back in the late 70s, early 80s. So,
where
the yeshiva, right next to Beth Abraham, whatever the shul, Zera Abraham, right down the block from that shul. So anyway, so we're in Denver, and the price of a bag of broccoli is $12, okay? So a price of this frozen broccoli with a hechsher in the Lakewood is $6, in North Miami Beach it's $8, and in Denver it's $12. But he's the only store for 1,000 miles. That is the market in Denver for broccoli, and that's what you're gonna pay, and he's justified in selling for that price.
But that's, I guess according to just a quick follow-up to Bob's question, in this case, it's the price is just, it's basically mazel, it's complete luck, and it has nothing to do with his costs. So his cost was $1, but he's, so it's able, I agree with him, but I'm saying like morally and halachically, someone's allowed to sell whatever the prevailing market rate is, and he doesn't have to factor into his own costs into it.
Right. Sometimes it works against you.
Which is fine.
Sometimes it works against you. Your costs, your profit margins are very small, but the market is such, and you're right.
Yeah, that to me is strange because, like, for instance, in Florida, we have price gouging laws. So if someone has, I don't know, toilet paper or lumber or stuff to, you know, for hurricane prevention, and the price goes all the way up, you're not allowed to take advantage of that because it's called price gouging as a crime.
But I think that's different than scarcity.
Right, but
scarcity.
Everybody agrees that the price goes up. The eggs went up to $5-6 a dozen. Nobody was charged with price gouging. That was the price based on the availability of the eggs and
well, price gouging. Same with lumber.
Right, 100%. We're not talking about that. Our point is the person's taking advantage, whether he knows it or he doesn't know it. He's taking advantage of the other person who doesn't realize that he's being taken advantage of. That's our discussion.
It's not an issue of profit. You make all the profit you want.
Right. It doesn't make the profit.
You just
is not
can't make. You can't charge more than the market value.
Correct. Exactly. So you're allowed to charge up to a sixth, because that is considered regular business practice. At a sixth, the sale, the deal is final, but you have to give it back. If it's more than a sixth, then the victim, irrespective of if the victim is the buyer or the seller, can demand an annulment of the sale. Okay. Now, there is an opinion in the Shulchan Aruch, it's a machlokes, but there is an opinion that holds that if the victim can retract on the sale, then the aggressor can also retract. So if he can pull out, I can pull out also, right? It's not fair that he should be able to pull out, even though he's the victim. As long as he can pull out, I can pull out as well. Until the victim shows interest that he plans on retaining the sale, at that point, the aggressor cannot annul it anymore. So maybe there would be some room to say on the. No, that wouldn't be relevant. Okay, fine. So that's this halacha. Okay.
Do these disputes happen frequently?
Say that again?
Do these type of disputes over price happen frequently?
Well, most people don't make such a big fuss. I came to realize that it's really very prevalent, these issues, and people are not aware of their rights. and or their wrongs, right? Meaning, yeah, so both ways. And that's why I took the time to think, and I felt it was, it needs to be, people need to be notified about it. But you do have, he told us, Rabbi Greenspan, that he had a din Torah where somebody had hired a contractor to do a job on his, to make a, whatever, a job on his house, remodeling or extension, whatever it was. And the fellow, the job that the fellow did was way below the price that he was charging. So let's say he hired him to do a $100,000 job and the fellow did a $60,000 job. So he took him this, so they hired an engineer or whatever it was to assess the correct price. But that's where it's gonna go. Most people are not going to Beis Din for $300, but people have to be aware that there's an issue here. Anytime you're getting too good of a deal or not, then you have to be aware of that. That's something that needs to, people need to be made aware of.
I mean, I, as it happens, I just finished building a house, and the prices that I got from different sources, the divergence in prices was extraordinary. Like one guy wanted $300,000 for the windows, and another guy quoted me $70,000 for the exact same windows. And it was like that on many different items. So how do you...
That's all included in the market price. That would all be included in the market price.
It's the same thing. Yeah. You know, it's just, so some people want to take advantage. They say, this guy may, you know, I'm going to take a shot. This guy doesn't really maybe know what it should cost. So,
people are probably paying him. It's $300,000. If nobody would give it, then he wouldn't charge it anymore.
Of course.
So it's a justifiable price, and that's the market price is bid. The market,
even though I could buy it at the same time from a different merchant or a different contractor for something else.
Yeah, yeah, because there's a market there. It's a broad...
That seems to negate all the things that we've been learning today.
What? Why does it negate that? Again,
well, because the real market, if you could buy something for 70 and you're saying that it should be within a sixth of that.
No, it's not a sixth of 70. It's a sixth of the range of the market. The market goes from 70 to 300.
You take an average of all the sellers and you figure it out.
So this is a very difficult point to figure out. But yeah, that's what you're going to have to do to figure out whatever. So until you're beyond the sixth above 300,000,
That's like an extreme. You know, right. It's too different.
No, but being the people, you're talking about a unique situation, but that's what would have to happen.
It's not really unique, honestly. It's for plumbing, carpentry, you can go down the list.
Yeah, I agree.
We got wide ranges of prices, and it was not interdependent on the quality of the good or service.
Right, but it depends on the fact that people actually pay. There could be that this guy tries to take advantage of Bob Stock and say a crazy number.
If he's taking advantage of Bob Stock, he's taking advantage of 100 other people like him, which means that people are ready to pay $300,000 for windows, making it a justifiable price, and that is a reasonable market price, period. That's the price. People are ready to pay it. That's what makes the price. People are ready to pay it.
So it has to be like a one-off to be on
the...
Yeah.
Meaning it happened one time that this guy just tried to take advantage of a non-knowledgeable buyer.
It can happen a little bit more than a one-off, but one guy who's charging more and I hear.
It have to be really like a ganef, you know, he just says he's a low flyer.
He's called a ganef. The Gemara asks why we need a pasuk to teach us the you're not allowed to steal if we have already a pasuk that says you're not allowed to do I know. That's the Gemara's question, right? Tovio. Gemara is in Ashok. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, it is like a ganef. Yeah, 100%. Then he has to give the money back. Yeah, it's very important.
Let's say something like, I don't know, is Elder Shul still practicing law? Elder Schwitz?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say he charges, I don't know, $2,000 an hour. I don't know, whatever he charges. The famous lawyer in the United States, right? And then there's another guy.
That's cheap for him.
Whatever, I'm making up. I have no idea. Fine, so let's say Elder, I remember, he represented...
My friend was working for Pfizer. My friend was working for...
Rabbi Katz's shul on Sunday.
My friend was working for the law firm that was representing Pfizer. That was representing Pfizer. They were billing Pfizer $1 million a day. Okay. Anyway,
then the market value would be, you have to have like different classes of lawyers. Person like Alvin Schwartz is not to charge as much, and the person like whoever charges as much.
So again, I said this is the hardest part. This is the hardest part, the most difficult part of this subject is to define. Hello, I'm from England. So the most difficult part of the subject is to define what exactly is the market price of something. But when we have a market price and we know we're way out of that, then there is a problem of, I know, of overcharging, and we need to understand that. Okay. Fine. So just a few, how much more time do we have? It's 52. As long as I want? Okay. So, I mean, there's a lot more detail here. So there's an important exclusion, very important to know. So the Mishnah says, there's no I know on karkois, shtaris, and avadim. So literally that means that this law doesn't apply to property. Shtar literally means a document, and avadim literally means slaves. Okay, bad word today. Fine. So, but the concept is like, it's a property we know, right? We know when it comes to property, simply it means you can't say I overcharged for property, because everybody, I want this property. A guy came, he fell in love with it. He's ready to pay $5 million, whatever it is. That's that concept when it comes to property.
Maybe there's no market for, there's no fair market value for real estate? Or is there a different reason why there's nothing?
No, that's the reason. It's a pasuk in the Marlins that have a pasuk that this is an exclusion to this law, that when it comes to real estate, this law does not apply. Okay? When we're talking about shtar literally means a document. The Gemara says it means anything that's ein guf and mamon, that the item itself doesn't have a value. I mean, people are ready to pay for it, but you're not paying for the thing. In this case, you're selling a loan note. The piece of paper is not the value. The value is what it represents. It doesn't really have a thing itself. So that also, if you overcharge, that would not be an issue. So that's that. But that would include anything that doesn't have a... What?
What's the svara behind that?
It's a pasuk in the Chumash. That's just an
exclusion. So it's the same idea behind the specific performance on real estate, that it's unique and it has a unique value to each person, and every piece of property is different. It's not fungible, where you could like go into the market and, you know, mushrooms here, or a certain type of mushroom is going to be fungible in the same in different markets. Whereas, I don't know, that's just my reasoning when I heard it, that
yeah,
it was...
But still, you know, they could appraise property.
No, I know.
They get comparable sales in the area and so on and so forth.
Right.
Meaning a Jew would spend, you know, I could sell my house for $800,000, right?
A house just sold for $450.
But no, a non-Jew has no reason why he would live in North Beach. So he would be willing to pay $200,000 for real estate. Right, so depending on what you want and what you're going for.
$200,000 not to live
there. Okay.
But so it's real estate depends on why you want to live there and why you don't live there. Are
okay.
Black, you know, to
so,
live to the
standard
is expensive, and that's
so
simple.
Okay, so that's one thing. Included in avadim are workers. When you have a worker, so in Jewish law, there are two types of workers. There's a worker called a payel, who works by time. He's hired by the day, a day laborer, or maybe a person who's hired to do work right now. He was told he must begin right now. That would also be called a payel. And also is included in this, and that again, that's included in avadim, and is also this exclusion of I don't want to use the word servant, but is included in that exclusion that wouldn't apply to day laborers. However, when it comes to people who work by the job, who work on their own terms, an accountant, or
an independent contractor, we call them.
An independent contractor, correct?
But it's not paid by the hour. Paid by the hour.
So the question is, if he bills by the hour, it could be that's just his price structure, but he's not obligating himself to do it at a specific time. It's an unclear area of where these two types of workers draw the line. But understanding a person who worked definitely a day laborer would not have this restriction of overcharging or underpaying. But a kabbalist, somebody who works by the job, would have this job. Now, let's say you hire someone to work on your property. So then we're dealing with property again. Property is excluded. Okay. Now it's important to understand what happens if we have a scenario where there's a few things. It happened recently. There was a story where a fellow sold a business, and it turned out that he way overpaid for the business. So then we need to sit down and dissect hire a, what's it called, the accountant,
forensic
accountant, to figure out what went for what. So the property itself of the business is under the exclusion. The equipment of the business would be included in this prohibition of overcharging. But let's say you get into things like the website, where there's no tangible thing. That's like ain't goof and mum. That's like a document where there's nothing really there. Name recognition, customer base. There's no thing there, right?
There are ways of valuing it.
I'm not saying that there aren't ways of evaluating it. People pay top dollar for this. I'm not saying not. But there is, in the fine print, so to speak, an exclusion of
overcharging.
There's an exclusion
of overcharging.
Is it?
There is no overcharging.
Again, there's an exclusion to overcharging on things that are not. There isn't a thing that you're paying for.
Intangible.
That's the word I needed. Thank you very much. That's an important halacha to know. Okay, I just want to speak on two more things. One more thing is, what happens if the guy tells me straight, I'm overcharging you. You want to buy it, buy it. You don't want to, don't. We're expensive. People call me, I say, I'm expensive. I charge more than the norm. I have a different thing because I happen to have a unique business, but no one else in the city is doing what I'm doing. But let's say I tell the guy straight, we are expensive. We charge above market value. So the halacha is that even if you speak that out, if you don't speak out explicitly how much you're overcharging him, then we say, well, he didn't know how much you're overcharging him. So you say, we're expensive. So he could say, well, you're an attorney. The attorney charged $500. He's charging me $600, right? Okay, sounds nice. But maybe he doesn't know that really attorneys charge $400 and you're charging him $600. So unless you speak out, the going rate for an attorney of my caliber is $500, but I'm charging you $750. So then that would be,
If that was spoken out on the side of
the street. Even if it's spoken out, it needs to be spoken out in specific terms.
You have to give full disclosure.
Correct. There's another halacha the other way. My daughter told me when we were discussing this at the Shabbos table, the whole thing with the babysitters, she said a girl in her class was given $75 an hour. So when you get to that point where it's so much more than normal and the lady knows that she's way out of the bracket, she knows she's way overpaying and she's doing it anyhow, it doesn't even need to be spoken out. We know that she, so to speak, waived her rights to the issue of overcharging because she knows that she's paying way beyond.
Which then it becomes like a gift.
Whatever. We know that everybody knows that this is not the price, and that would be okay as well. So that's an important. So that's basically the topic. It goes on and on, but
Did students like show up to school again in a fancy car, charging those prices? No, I'm kidding.
Anyway, that was the story. Anyway,
very interesting. Thank you very much.
Very welcome. Sure. You're very welcome.
I'm sorry, I missed most of your presentation. Okay. Next one, I'll be here.
Okay. Okay. So if somebody wants to represent me in my case against the accountant, they'll overcharge me, you know?
Arguably, a lawyer is an avid.
You'll have to go to bed.
It could be. That, it's a great area to define a pile and a coblin. Exactly what it is, but it's important to know that
but the Rush's answer doesn't answer the question that is there. There's no limiting principle on services that I can, that like I said, let's not use me because then I'm biased. Let's say an accountant, he charges $200,000 to do this whole mergers and acquisitions, and 3 years later the owner comes and says, hey, I think he's overcharged, I'm bringing the best in. He would have a claim, you're saying.
Yeah,
whether he's right or wrong, but he would have a claim. Yeah. Bring the best in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's such a wide diversity of quality. I mean, like, for instance, if you get an opinion of one lawyer or one accountant as the value, it means much more, just like a rabbi. If a rabbi gives an opinion on the law, depending on the reputation of the rabbi, it could be very, very convincing. Or if it's a shlemiel, not such a big deal.
Right, right, right. Right, right.
So how do you value those things?
It's
very difficult.
You're right. Again, this is this part of this subject that you keep raising is the most difficult part to define exactly how to rate the price.
See, to me, the biggest problem with the discussion that we're having today is that it leads to disputes. So under the law, the secular law, more or less, you know, if you're dealing with a willing buyer and a willing seller and they're over 18 and they're not under some kind of a disability, it's final. So there can't be disputes. So the question is, what's better? Is it better to have finality where people are not coming back years later and fighting with one another in a community? Or is it better to have this sense of justice and always be able to...
They warned me in advance that Bob is going to ask this very hard question.
No, I mean, that's what I'm thinking about.
No, I understand. I have to do more research on this point. You're raising a very, very good point. And I have to look into it further, but I hear.
Yeah.